Hello, and welcome to the Commander Theory Podcast. I'm Nick Beatman, and today I'm here with a special guest, Brian, better known as Rubix on our Discord server. Thanks for coming back on the show, Brian.
Of course, glad to be here.
All right, so today we're going to be continuing the Lost Caverns of Ixalan set review, and we're going to be talking all about the main deck cards from both Lost Caverns of Ixalan and the Lost Caverns Commander decks. Just a quick disclaimer before we get into it, I'm mostly going to be avoiding any tribal rewards in these two products. For the most part, y'all can figure out if a card says draw a card for each dinosaur you control, then that probably goes in the dinosaur deck. And today I kind of just wanted to focus on cards that I think are more interesting, more broadly applicable, or require a little bit more analysis. So with that being said, I think we can jump right into the white cards. Do you want to read off this first one, Brian?
Yeah, I can. The first one is Bronzebeak Foragers. It is 3 and a white for a 3/4 creature dinosaur. And it says, when Bronzebeak Foragers enters the battlefield, for each opponent, exile up to one target non-land permanent that player controls until Bronzebeak Foragers leaves the battlefield. It also has an activated ability for X and a white, where you can put target card with mana value X that is exiled with Bronzebeak Foragers into its owner's graveyard, and you gain X life.
So I think the easiest point of comparison for this card is Grasp of Fate. Grasp of Fate being an enchantment that also exiles one non-land permanent for each opponent when it enters the battlefield. This is definitely more vulnerable by being a creature, but it also has a huge advantage of being able to just poop out the things it takes. And I think that there might be some political dimension to the card. I think even though, my experience with Grasp of Fate is that people are typically like willing to pop it to get their thing back, even if it means that their opponents will also get their things back. But with Bronzebeak Foragers, you might be able to say like, hey, let me at least poop out, you know, opponent A and B's things before you kill it and get your thing back, opponent C. Also worth noting, just because of the way the colon is placed on the activated ability, putting the card back is part of the effect. So if you activate it, your opponent can respond with spot removal and still get their thing back. But what do you think about Bronzebeak Foragers?
I don't immediately love that it costs one more mana than Grasp of Fate, but the ability to not necessarily lock away the card that you removed because it doesn't leave it in exile, but the ability to put it into a different zone other than the battlefield is useful. I don't know personally how often I would be activating that put target card into its owner's graveyard, just because life gain is... In Commander, you already have a lot of life. It's very rare that I find games won or lost based on pure life gain.
I mean, the life gain, I would say, is like a nice bonus. It's definitely not what I'm most excited about. And I don't think I would be like really actively trying to put these cards into my graveyard. It's more I just like that I have the option and that I can sort of do it instant speed if I have nothing better to do. So like maybe I'll pass the turn with 2 or 3 mana up for my like generous gift or my like fateful absence. But if I see no good targets, you know, during my opponent's end step, then I might just activate this, throw like a soul ring into the graveyard before I untap.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Overall, I really like this card. I'm definitely going to be testing it in my white decks going forward. Okay, next card is Dauntless Dismantler. It's 1 and a white for a 1/4 creature human artificer. Artifacts your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped, and you can pay XX white and sacrifice Dauntless Dismantler to destroy each artifact with mana value X. What do you think about Dauntless Dismantler?
I really like this card. My first thought is being able to spend 1 mana to nuke all artifact tokens is fantastic. I think anything beyond zero mana or one mana artifacts, I think it reaches the point where I'd rather cast Farewell. But as far as, depending on your meta, if there's a lot of artifact tokens, whether it be clue decks, token decks, I think this is an absolutely fantastic card.
Yeah, I think it does a really good job of hosing treasure production if you see a lot of that in your metagame. And also just if you see mana rocks, you know, they certainly lose a lot of their luster if they're entering the battlefield tapped. I agree with you. I would not be very excited to activate this card for more than like X equals one. I think at that point, I definitely would rather be trying to just go for like mass artifact sweeping, maybe a Farewell, maybe like a Cleansing Nova, just some sort of like card with a lot of optionality. Because I think it is pretty easy to get mass artifact removal into your white deck without a lot of effort, just between Austere Command, Farewell, Cleansing Nova, and a couple other options. You can definitely answer artifacts if you need to. All right, moving on to the next card. This is From the Rubble. 4 white-white for an enchantment. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. And at the beginning of your end step, return target creature card of the chosen type from your graveyard to the battlefield with a finality counter on it. And as a reminder, a finality counter means if a creature with a finality counter on it would die, you exile it instead. So what do you think about From the Rubble?
White reanimation, it's becoming a little more common, which is great to see. It's, of course, weaker than any other reanimation we might see in black or whatnot, because it's outside of white's usual color pie. I like the flavor of the one-time reanimation. I think that fits very well with white's flavor. Obviously, this is best in a tribal deck. I can't think of many uses for this outside of a deck that has a lot of one particular creature type.
There's a lot of restrictions on this card, and I don't know if it needed all of them. Like, we just got Virtue of Persistence in Wilds of Eldraine. So I think even without the typal restriction, it would be clear that white reanimation is not as good as black reanimation. You can only hit things in your yard. This gives them a finality counter. That being said, like, there are some decks that are probably interested in this. There are a couple ways to fit in counter removal into a deck without really burning a slot. Like, I think there are cards like Scholar of New Horizons or Nesting Grounds that have pretty low opportunity cost to run. Like, Nesting Grounds is just a land. Scholar of New Horizons kind of replaces itself with a card and can potentially get multiple cards. So it's easy enough to fit those into your deck, and then you just get the benefit of like being able to take off those finality counters or even put them onto your opponent's creatures. When that happens, you're sort of able to get some more value out of this in the long run.
I had not even thought about the possibility of putting finality counters on the creature an opponent controls, because it doesn't specify in the reminder text for finality counters that it has to be yours.
Yeah. I love that Nesting Grounds can put things on your opponent's stuff. It's nice getting some new functionality as finality counters become a part of Magic. The way it's worded, I think we're going to see this as a common restriction on reanimation. I think it's just going to be a thing going forward. So I love that it's a counter that can then be interacted with other cards.
With that in mind, I'd even love to see Wizards of the Coast start to interact more with the idea of finality counters on opponents' creatures. That sounds like a very fun deck that I would very much enjoy building at some point.
Yeah, that could be like a nice rider, like put a finality counter on target creature. Could be sweet.
Our next card is Get Lost. It is 1 and a white for an instant that reads destroy target creature, enchantment, or a planeswalker, and its controller creates 2 map tokens. And a reminder, map tokens are artifacts with 1 tap, sacrifice this artifact, target creature you control explores, activate only as a sorcery. Do I need to read the reminder text for explore as well?
I think we'll be okay. It is kind of silly that we're getting these like nested mechanics. Certainly like makes the game a little bit harder to learn, but whatever. This set had a rush design, so maybe we can't knock them too hard. Okay, but to get on to Get Lost, I think this is an instant white staple. I've been running like Fateful Absence in my white decks, or at least my white decks that don't have black or blue in their color identity. And I think Get Lost is just mostly better. You can hit an additional card type. And while this does provide two map tokens, as opposed to the one clue given by Fateful Absence, there are a lot of restrictions on map tokens. So you need to have a target. You can't crack a map token if you don't have a creature to explore. And you can only activate a map as a sorcery. So there are some play patterns that, you know, an opponent could do when they had a clue token, like I'm going to leave up some mana for some instant speed interaction. And then if nothing happens, then I'm just going to crack my clue instead. Well, they can't do that with map tokens. They have to commit to doing the map thing before they can do anything else. I think that like the drawback here isn't too significant, and being able to answer three permanent types for two mana at instant speed seems fantastic. What are your thoughts on Get Lost?
I absolutely love this card. I, especially outside of Commander, I absolutely love seeing the type Planeswalker being included on destruction spells. Having it at two mana is a fantastic rate. I can't think of any reason not to run this card in pretty much any white deck.
Definitely. Hoping to pick these up as the set comes out. And we're getting closer and closer to a critical mass of just like white instant speed spot removal spells. We have Swords, we have Path to Exile, we have Fateful Absence, we have Get Lost, Generous Gift, Excise the Imperfect, Stroke of Midnight. I mean, I guess also Contraband, Livestock. So we're basically there with white. Maybe a couple more cards would help out, but in terms of filling out the removal suite in your white deck, I think we're pretty much there, which is great. I'm so happy that we've gotten to this point.
Me too. I will say I am a little concerned to see this at a rare card slot. It makes me worried that in order to get a few copies for myself will be more than the few dollars I hope it will be. But
that is a concern. It could be something that we just have to like wait for rotation or something. Fateful Absence, despite still being in standard, is only 55 cents. So I think hopefully we'll be okay, but we'll see how things shake out. I'm ready to move on to the next card. This is Illustrious Wanderglyph. 4 and a white for a 2/2 artifact creature golem with ascend, which means if you have 10 or more permanents, you have the city's blessing for the rest of the game. And then other artifact creatures you control get +2/+2 as long as you have the city's blessing. And at the beginning of each upkeep, create a 1/1 colorless gnome artifact creature token. Basically, they just moved Tendershoot Dryad from green to white. There are some minor differences in how this works. This is an artifact creature. The tokens it makes are artifact creatures. And the buff it grants is to all artifact creatures and not just the type that it makes. It's potentially like more vulnerable to, say, like a Bane of Progress or something like that. But it also can pump like your mirror and your golems and other things like that. So there's pluses and minuses. How do you feel about this color shifted staple?
If you're running a artifact creature deck, this is, I think, a pretty good anthem. Not only are you making tokens will help you get to the city's blessing threshold, but once you get there, you're getting +2/+2 to all your artifact creatures, making a additional artifact creature tokens on top of that.
Having played with Tendershoot Dryad, if it survives a round of turns, if it just like gets to make a token on a full round of turns, you just guaranteed have the city's blessing. It's so easy to achieve that. Even outside of a deck that has a lot of artifact creatures or cares about buffing artifact creatures, I think this is just fine as a token producer. For 5 mana, you're getting the body of the Wanderglyph itself, plus potentially like 4 bodies per round of turns. I think that's a pretty good rate. Like you're going to be able to attack for a lot on your next turn, spread across a lot of bodies. Your other anthems are going to be giving their buff to each of the tokens as well as the glyph itself. I think it's just very effective. We don't have that many white token producers that can produce as many bodies for the same rate. Granted, it does lose a lot of its value against spot removal compared to, say, like a Conqueror's Pledge or a Increasing Devotion or something. Still, I think there's few enough cards of this caliber that I would just be happy to run this in a token deck.
Yeah, I'll admit, I wasn't immediately thrilled to bookmark this for placement in my token deck. However, it definitely is going on the list of cards to look at, because as you say, any repeating token generation is very valuable, even if it is coming at the cost of 5 mana for a 2/2. Our next one is Redemption Choir. It is 2 white-white for a 3/3 creature, Vampire Cleric, with lifelink. And then it also has the Coven ability. Whenever Redemption Choir enters the battlefield or attacks, if you control 3 or more creatures with different powers, return target permanent card with mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield.
I mean, clearly so much of this card's value is dependent on getting Coven. There's a lot of like 2 power creatures, like just useful creatures in white. And so it's like, can you get a 1 power creature? Can you get a 4 power creature? Can you pump up some of your creatures? That's kind of the question. If your deck is built such that you are able to consistently get your Coven online, then obviously this is great. I mean, it's a 4 cost Sun Titan. It has life gain synergies. It slots into a lot of the combos that Sun Titan slots into. Like, there's just so many ways to get value there. You know, Sun Titan and Fiend Hunter or Angelic Renewal or Gift of Immortality or Saffy. There's many, many, many cards that just combine with Sun Titan to create infinite sack fodder. I just am very happy to see this card. I also really like that, unlike Guardian Scale Lord from earlier this year, from the March of the Machine Commander precons, this card can get back land. So it has that classic like Sun Titan ramp functionality, even if you don't have any juicier targets. What do you think about Redemption Choir?
So my first thought when I read the card was an Adeline deck. And I know that you are the authority on this show when it comes to Adeline aggro decks. Do you think that this is a card that would work well in a deck like that?
In Adeline, I have found that like what I most want to do is, you know, play a creature on turn 1 or 2, play Adeline on turn 3 and immediately get her trigger, and then turn 4 or 5, drop some kind of big anthem. So I feel like the recursion here is more useful for a deck that's trying to go for like a longer game strategy. I do think I would want to play it in my mono white good stuff deck, because that is like a slower, grindier game plan. The commander for that deck is Lauren of the Third Path. So she both like provides another number for your coven and is also just a good target for reanimation. That's the deck I would want to try this in. I just don't know if it aligns with what I'm doing in Adeline.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I was just thinking of decks where it'd be very easy to hit that coven trigger as it's entering the battlefield.
For sure. All right, that was our last white card. Let's move on to the blue cards. And we're going to start with Kitesail Larcenist. It's 2 and a blue for a 2/3 creature human pirate with flying and ward 1. When Kitesail Larcenist enters the battlefield, for each player, choose up to 1 other target artifact or creature that player controls. For as long as Kitesail Larcenist remains on the battlefield, the chosen permanents become treasure artifacts with tap, sacrifice this artifact, add 1 mana of any color, and lose all other abilities. So how do you feel about Kitesail Larcenist?
I think that this is a very easy card to include in a lot of blue decks. I'll admit, I was on the fence about it the first time I read it, but that's mainly because I didn't catch the for each player clause the first time I read it. Once I realized that it hit everybody, it's just a card that I think becomes a blue staple for control decks at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a big fan of this card as well. It's also kind of a Grasp of Fate, but I also just like that it's just like a really strong blue creature. And to be honest, like there aren't that many, tell me if this is controversial, I just feel like there aren't that many like non-clone blue creatures that you're happy to run in like any deck that just do something that's good anywhere. And we've seen some more recently, like I think, you know, Fairy Mastermind probably falls into that category, maybe Ledger Shredder. But I was like trying to build like a mono blue good stuff deck recently. There just like weren't very many blue creatures where I felt like, oh, I have to run this. And I think this, but this card, I feel like crosses that threshold. I know this is going a little broad here, but like, what do you feel about the quality of blue creatures overall? Like, how would you place this among blue creatures in general in Commander?
I definitely agree with a lot of what you're saying about this is one of the better ones we've seen in a long time. The first thing that my brain wanted to compare it to was the Fairy Mastermind card that we got in March of the Machine. This feels like just what you're saying, with the exception of clones, I cannot think of many mono blue creatures off the top of my head other than Fairy Mastermind and Kitesail Larcenist here that I'm going to put on a stack of cards where that I will consider for basically any deck that I am building that has blue. It's just like with white cards, Lorna Third Path. For blue, I think that that list includes Kitesail Larcenist.
Big get for blue this time around. I guess big get for pirate decks as well. But do you have any other thoughts about Kitesail Larcenist before we move on to the next card?
I wish I had Ward 2. I think Ward 1, as you've mentioned on the podcast before, isn't enough of a hurdle to provide really good protection, especially since it is for as long as it's on the battlefield.
Maybe Ward plus the combination of the fact that like you're keeping your other opponent's things locked down as well will maybe deter some removal. But yeah, if somebody really wants it gone, that's not much of a speed bump.
Our next one is Ripples of Potential. It is one and a blue for an instant that reads Proliferate. Then choose any number of permanents you control that had a counter put on them this way. Those permanents phase out.
This seems like a really good protection for planeswalkers in particular. It'll tick up all your planeswalkers, give them another loyalty, and also just keep them from being attacked until your next turn. So really good sort of fog plus counters. And then of course, if you're running like a blue X plus and plus one counter deck, this is great at just buffing your guys and protecting them from like mass removal. But what are your thoughts about Ripples of Potential?
I absolutely love this style of board protection. Phasing out is to me a way of protecting your board that I like so much more than giving indestructible or hexproof, because of course, especially as white board wipes have gotten so much better, we're seeing a lot more exile that indestructible or hexproof can't do anything about. Mm-hmm. So having a mass phase out card like this in non-white is very nice to see, because all the ones that I can think of, at least off the top of my head, have been white cards.
Absolutely. All right, I don't have too much more to say about that one, so I'm going to move on to the first double face card we're covering today. This is the Enigma Jewel. It's a single blue mana for a legendary artifact. It enters the battlefield tapped, and it has tap, add, CC. Spend this mana only to activate abilities. And it has craft with four or more non-lands with activated abilities for eight and a blue, meaning that you can pay eight and a blue and exile that artifact and exile, you know, the four or more non-lands with activated abilities from among other permanents you control and or cards in your graveyard to return the Enigma Jewel to the battlefield transformed. So, and of course, you can only do that as a sorcery. So the reverse of this card is Locus of Enlightenment. It's a legendary artifact, and it has each activated ability of the exiled cards used to craft it. You may activate each of those abilities only once each turn. Whenever you activate an ability that isn't a mana ability, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy. So what are your thoughts on this card? This is a lot of text. What do you think about what it might mean in Commander?
Well, as we were reading it just now, I realized that it can help pay for its own craft cost because craft does not require tapping. I always love seeing abilities that allow copying of other abilities. That, of course, leads to so many shenanigans, and that's one of my favorite parts of Commander is the amount of different shenanigans you can get into. However, along that same line, I struggle to think of what deck I would specifically put this in. I'm sure it's one of those cards that once I've forgotten about it, I will suddenly remember it or see it in a scroll on EDH Rec and immediately find a spot for it. But as is right now, I struggle to think of any cards that really want this particular effect.
I agree with you. I think that this doesn't, I mean, it certainly doesn't go in every deck, but I think it is a notable card. And I'm evaluating this mostly without really focusing on the back half. I like transforming this is a really, really steep cost. So I think it's interesting just as like a one mana rock that taps for two mana, provided you can find like the right outlet for that mana. And in that way, it looks a lot like Omen Hawker from March of the Machines. And the fact that we've gotten these like two very similar cards with that potentially offer an incredible rate of mana production in such a short period of time, it's been about 6 months, it makes me think that maybe we'll see more of these designs in the future. And you know, it is possible that the like circumstances that led to their printing were kind of unique. Like it was a major theme in March of the Machine to have incubate tokens. So there was like a natural way for a lot of decks in the format to just like use mana for activated abilities. And the Enigma Jewel is coming in Lost Caverns of Ixalan, where we have all these craft abilities that come with expensive activations. But if this is just going to be like a normal type of blue design we see going forward, then it could be really interesting once we get to a critical mass of this type of effect. Because once we have like, you know, 10 of these or something, it becomes worth thinking about like warping your deck so that you can take advantage of them. And there are things happening to make it easier to use this mana repeatedly. Like cycling is now deciduous. Any set can have cycling, and we've seen tons of random cycling cards just in the last 6 months. We had land cycling cards in March of the Machine and in Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth, and there's a cycle of land cyclers in Lost Caverns of Ixalan. So as cyclers become more prevalent, we're getting more ways to just easily fit activated ability costs in your deck. You can also maybe warp your mana base to include things like, you know, War Room, or just like lands that have useful activated abilities. That's a good way to repeatedly sink your mana into. So it's just something I'm like keeping an eye on. And I think that over time, as we get more of these, it's going to allow you to just do more things and make use of your mana better than your opponents.
Yeah, plus the ability that it gives you to have a turned one cycle, if you're doing cycling too, of course, is being able to do more on turn one than just playing a land is always very fun. Our next card is also a double face card, but this time it has a land on the back. This is the Ever-Flowing Well. It is 2 and a blue for a legendary artifact that when it enters the battlefield, you mill 2 cards, and then you draw 2 cards. And it also has Descend 8. At the beginning of your upkeep, if there are 8 or more permanent cards in your graveyard, then you transform the Ever-Flowing Well. Backside, like I mentioned, is a land. It is a legendary artifact land that has tap at blue whenever you cast a permanent spell using mana produced by the Myriad Pools. Up to 1 other target permanent you control becomes a copy of that spell until end of turn.
The base rate of this card is like a divination, which is clearly not great, but there are just a ton of things going on with it that make it a little bit more appealing. Like there are commanders that care about legendaries. There's certainly a lot of commanders that care about artifacts. Depending on how your deck is built, it may not be that difficult to get the Descend 8 and have this also be kind of a mana rock in a sense. There's a lot going on here. I don't think it's too difficult to fit this into a lot of decks if they care about any of these components. I think this could potentially fit in there. And of course, like once you have it transformed, the value it offers of just like, okay, I'm going to turn my land into a huge creature or like a big mana rock or something. It all seems pretty compelling to me, despite the fact that like the floor is divination, but the ceiling is really, really high. But what do you think about the Everflowing Well?
I think it's a very interesting card. The ability on the backside is very fun. Giving multiple copies of creature or some high value artifact is just very fun. I also love cards that can flip into lands. I do wish they weren't legendary lands, but I understand why they are. I do like the fact that this has mill two on top of the draw two cards, because that can, if you've got a lot of permanent cards in your deck, that can get you a quarter of the way to flipping it over already.
If you've got a suite of fetch lands in your deck, that's going to naturally contribute to descend. If you've got like cycling cards, if you're sacrificing things, how about in an Emry deck? How do you feel about this card?
I think it's an easy include for an Emry deck, yeah. I don't even think in an Emry deck that milling two cards is even a cost. I don't know if it's a cost to begin with, but it definitely is not for decks that want to fill up the graveyard.
So I think there's a lot of decks out there that can make use of this card. Very interesting to me. I'm going to be keeping an eye on this, and we'll get into this more later, especially as we get to red. I just like how many like artifacts there are in the set that just have useful ETB triggers, but we'll discuss that more later. Speaking of artifacts, this next card is the Indomitable. It's 2 blue-blue for a 6/6 legendary artifact vehicle. It has trample, and whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. It also has crew 3, and you may cast the Indomitable from your graveyard as long as you control 3 or more tapped pirates and or vehicles. So what do you think about the Indomitable?
I can already think of at least two decks off the top of my head that would absolutely love this card, of ones that I personally have built, just for the card draw. The 6/6 vehicle for 4 mana, I think, is a bonus. Trample is always a good keyword to see on something with higher stats like this. And being able to cast it from your graveyard, I think, is a very interesting payoff if you are playing with either pirate or vehicle tribal.
There's a lot of flavor text on this card. Like you said, the real highlight is the Coastal Piracy effect. Like, Bind of Thassa is in over 90,000 decks on EDHREC. Reconnaissance Mission is in over 90,000 decks on EDHREC. This is just a really, really useful effect. It's, you know, the same mana cost as all the other options. And I personally have, you know, several decks that are easily going to be able to use the Indomitable. I'm happy to see more effects like this. We're still not at a critical mass, but with every new thing they print, we get closer.
Yeah, I have no complaints about this. Our next one is Tashana's Tidebinder. It is 2 and a blue for a 3/2 creature merfolk wizard with flash. And when it enters the battlefield, counter up to 1 target activated or triggered ability. If an ability of an artifact, creature, or planeswalker is countered this way, that permanent loses all abilities for as long as Tashana's Tidebinder remains on the battlefield, and mana abilities cannot be targeted.
Evaluating this in the abstract can be kind of tricky, but I will say that I looked through all my commander decks, and I've got a lot of commander decks built. And only 3 of those commanders don't have an activated or triggered ability. So I think most of the time you're going to be able to hit somebody's commander with this. And if you do, just shutting it off is really, really annoying. So at that base level, I think it's great. And then, of course, you can also just hit the many, many activated and triggered abilities that aren't commanders, and just lock down those permanents as well. I think this is like super versatile. Won't be that hard to like, I'm going to hold up 3 mana. Maybe I'll play my Tashana's Tidebinder, or maybe I'll counter a spell, or maybe I'll just draw some cards. That's pretty easy to do in blue. So I think there's lots of targets, relatively like low opportunity cost to hold up the mana for it. Just seems like a good card. What are your thoughts on the Tidebinder?
I think this is a great card, even you were saying a lot of commanders have activated abilities, even if the activated ability is not the main goal of the commander. For instance, take a Mondrak deck. The main goal of the deck isn't necessarily activating the ability to give it indestructible. But at some point across the game, it's highly likely that the Mondrak player will activate that ability at some point. Being able to then cast Tashana's Tidebinder and not only stop the activated ability making it indestructible, but also you turn off the token doubling is, just in that one scenario, it's a fantastic effect. As a player who does not play a lot of counter spells and has a lot of decks where it's really only fun for me to play if my commander is doing its thing, I hate the sound of this card. But also as someone who's about to build an Urza control deck, I need a copy.
Blue is definitely getting some goodies in this set. With that, we can transition into the next card. This is Wave Goodbye. It's 2 blue-blue for a sorcery. Return each creature without a +++ counter on it to its owner's hand. What do you think about Wave Goodbye?
This card is doing exactly what Simic decks want to do. I can't think of much else to say about it than that.
I mean, I think the easiest point of comparison is like Whelming Wave. Whelming Wave is in 36,000 decks on EDH Rec. Both cards like kind of suggest, oh, you should play it in this specific type of deck. But really, it's just like the thing that they are protecting is uncommon enough that you can just play it as, okay, bounce all creatures for 4 mana and you won't be disappointed. That's a fine rate, even if you don't have any creatures in your deck that have +++ counters on them. I like this card. I think that blue mass bounce has room for more cards like this at this rate. I think it's a fine addition to the format. Do you want to read off our first black card?
This is Preacher of the Schism. It is 2 and a black for a 2/4 creature vampire cleric with death touch. And when he attacks the player with the most life, or tied for the most life, you create a 1/1 white vampire creature token with lifelink. And whenever he attacks while you have the most life, or are tied for most life, you draw a card and you lose 1 life.
I think this is fine in a deck that's looking for sack fodder. No matter what happens, you're probably fine with the outcome in that type of list. You know, if you have the most life, okay, I got a card, cool. If you don't have the most life, you get a token, and then you're running a bunch of engines that can convert that token into a card, like, you know, your Mind Slash or your Attrition or your Skull Clamp and so on and so forth. So I think it's like, it's not as efficient as, you know, an Ophiomancer or like a Bloodghast potentially. I think there's room for cards like this. And unlike, say, you know, a Mardu Strike Leader or whatever, it is challenging to block this. It's not easy to effectively trade for Preacher of the Schism.
I do like to see the additional payoff to if you have the most life, because we've had a lot of these effects before, whether it's Dethrone or just asking that you attack the player with the most life. But in most of those, there's not a other ability where if you have the most life. So I really like seeing that here, because it means that hopefully in the future we'll have some benefit to you having the most life as well.
Well, they did something similar in Commander Legends Battle for Baldur's Gate, where they had those cards that they specified, like, if no opponent has more life than that opponent, you get the bonus. So it's just like, of your opponents, are you hitting the person with the most life? That's a fine way to do it, too. But I also agree. I like that they are playing more in the space of, like, whoops, I'm winning, so all my cards turn off. Or, like, they prevent that situation from happening. All right, next up is Bitter Triumph. This is 1 and a black for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, discard a card or pay 3 life. Destroy target creature or planeswalker. So to me, this seems like a new staple black removal spell. It looks a lot like Infernal Grasp, which has seen huge adoption since it was printed in Midnight Hunt. Infernal Grasp is now in 143,000 decks, and Bitter Triumph is pretty much on the same level. You do get the option to destroy planeswalkers with Bitter Triumph. If you choose to pay the life option, you have to pay 1 more life. But you also have this alternate option of discarding a card. And I think that adds a lot of value to it, because it can potentially be a discard outlet. This might be like Magical Christmas Land, but
the idea of going like turn two, kill some utility creature, discard a big fatty, and then on my turn, untap and then play like an animate dead or a necromancy and get back whatever fatty I discarded. That seems really powerful, and it's just a good way to get additional discard outlets and additional discard synergies into your deck. So I'm really pleased with this card. I think this adds a lot to the format. I'm definitely going to pick up a couple copies for my black decks. Do you want to move on to the next card?
Yes. This is Promise of Aklazotz. It is a one and a black for an enchantment that reads, at the beginning of your instep, you may sacrifice a non-demon creature. If you do, populate. It is also an adventure. It has a sorcery, Foul Rebirth, for two and a black. That reads, sacrifice a non-demon creature. If you do, create a 4/3 white and black vampire demon creature token with flying.
I get the joke. You play the adventure and you basically get a token that's worth populating. So maybe you're running like a black sack fodder deck. You've got your blood gas. You got your reassembling skeleton. And then each turn you get to convert, you know, a piece of sack fodder into a 4/3 demon. That seems okay. What I'm more compelled to do with this card is run it in the black commanders that make token copies of things. There's like, you know, the Scarab God, there's Ratadrabic, Anakthea, Inala, et cetera, et cetera. There's quite a number of them. And I think in those decks, it's, you know, fantastic. You're populating like actual good cards instead of just like tokens. Like most black tokens just aren't very good or large. I mean, yeah, there's some ways to make like 5/5 demons, but most decks aren't trying to do that. Like most of the time in my black decks, if I'm making tokens, I'm just trying to get like the most efficient rate. Like I'll take a 0/1 Eldrazi spawn because that sacrifices to a skull clamp just fine, or it sacrifices to an attrition just fine. So populating most of the time in a black deck is not that compelling. But, you know, populating token copies of something sick seems quite good to me. But what are your thoughts on Promise of Aklazotz?
Like you said, it's a very funny card. That is half the reason why I play Magic, to play funny cards. But like you say, it doesn't necessarily fit in with a lot of themes that a lot of black commanders that I can think of are really going for. I do like thematically what the card is doing. It's very fun. If I'm ever playing vampires, I'm probably going to throw this in just because it's a funny card that makes vampires. But I don't know how good of a card it really will turn out to be.
I think it's pretty narrow, honestly. Let's move on to the next card. Do you want to read this off?
Yeah, this is Skeleton Crew. For 3 and a black, you get a 3/3 creature, Skeleton Pirate. That reads, each other creature you control, that's a skeleton or a pirate, gets +1/+1. And whenever one or more creature cards leave the graveyard, you make a 2/2 black skeleton pirate creature token. And then an activated ability for 5 and a black, you can return Skeleton Crew from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
If you've got a pirate typal deck, you can throw this in. I don't think skeleton typal is really there yet, but maybe one day. But really, when I see this card, I'm thinking about this being like a third copy of Desecrated Tomb or Tormod the Desecrator for decks that are just like moving creatures between zones a lot. It's a pretty good payoff for those types of decks. What do you think about Skeleton Crew?
I do wish it didn't limit it to one token creature for every time any amount of creatures leave your graveyard. I always like effects that give you whatever the reward is per instance of the trigger. I wish that you could do a mass reanimate and get a whole bunch of 2/2 black skeletons. But as it is, it's a very good token generator for decks that are moving things back and forth from graveyard to battlefield. It's easy sack fodder generation because presumably, if you're running a lot of sack outlets, you probably have a few reanimation and things. This is just a pretty good card to throw in there just as a token generator, even, I'd think.
Might be goofy, but like if you have like a Phyrexian Altar and a Tortured Existence, then You know, you discard a creature card, get a creature card back. Skeleton Crew triggers, gives you a skeleton. You sack the skeleton to your Phyrexian Altar, get a black mana, and then you're back where you started. You can also do something with like Phyrexian Altar and Nether Trader. I think that would work. Let's say you just have like any other creature in Nether Trader. You sack Nether Trader for a black for Phyrexian Altar. You then sacrifice any other creature for a black mana. You get back Nether Trader. When Nether Trader leaves your graveyard, you get a skeleton. You sack Nether Trader again. So I guess that's infinite mana and infinite death triggers in that case. I mean, you could do the same thing with Tormod, but it just like slots into those combos as well. Anyway, too much time talking about a silly pun name card. Let's move on to the next one.
This is Tarion's Journal. It is one and a black for legendary artifact with tap, sacrifice another artifact or creature, draw a card. Activate only as a sorcery. And then two, tap, discard your hand, transform Tarion's Journal. On the back is the Tomb of Akhlazots. It is a legendary land cave. It taps for one black. It also can tap it to cast a creature spell from your graveyard this turn. If you do, it enters the battlefield with a finality counter on it and is a vampire in addition to its other types.
This is not as good as many of the sack outlets I've been talking about today, but it's not terrible. I think like the front half of the card, just like paying two mana, okay, every turn I'm going to sacrifice my Bloodghast and draw a card, and then I'll play a land and get it back. That seems fine, provided you're running a deck that can consistently provide that sack fodder. It's not great, but it's okay. And then the back half of this, the Tomb of Akhlazots, provided you can get there, that seems fantastic. Like, I mean, it's a land, so you've already kind of like ramped yourself. And then also just having the ability to whatever cast one creature per turn from your graveyard is fantastic. That's definitely how you can win a grindy game of Commander. And then maybe you've got some finality counter tech in your deck. Maybe not. Who cares, really? I think there's enough value here potentially. The really tricky part of this card is discarding your hand. Like, my black decks tend to just like have a ton of cards in hand at all times. So I think that is, especially like, you know, if you're drawing additional cards by activating your Tarion's Journal, that's just like a huge cost for most decks. I think they're maybe if you're running like a Malfagor deck or something that does a lot of symmetrical discard, then maybe you can activate that and not feel too bad about it. That's kind of what I'm thinking about. Like, maybe some of the black discard decks, if you've got things like Bottomless Pit or Cunning Lethmancer or Necrogen Mists, things that hit, or Oppression, whatever, things that hit all players, then maybe you can like get your hand down to the point where you're losing only like 0 to 1 cards, but to activate the Tarion's Journal. And in that case, it's probably pretty good. But God, I feel like in most black decks, that second activation is just really quite a stumbling block. How do you feel about Tarion's Journal?
My initial reaction is that I'm very disappointed to see that the sacrifice another artifact or creature draw a card is at sorcery speed. For most of Magic history, we've had sack outlets at instant speed, and it's almost a little annoying to see a very good sack outlet that draws a card that you have to do on your turn. You can't keep up a blocker and then sacrifice it before the damage because it's going to die anyway. That definitely makes me a little disappointed to see. However, as for the other activability of at least the front, discarding your hand, like you're saying, a lot of decks, that definitely is going to be a huge hindrance. However, I have a Sauron deck that I already have plans to put this in, where you're discarding your hand ideally once or twice a turn anyway.
Okay.
In that deck, this cost basically isn't a cost at all.
That's sweet. I like that. That's a really good idea. You do end up in a point in Sauron decks, like you want your density of ring tempting to be high, but you kind of end up in that situation. It's like when you have like two wheels in your hand, well, you definitely can't cast both.
Right.
So if you have like two Ring Tempters in your hand, you know, you discard your Nazgul and then the Tomb of Aklazaths can potentially get it back.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That seems really sweet. I like that. So next up, we're going to get into the red cards, starting with Bone Horde Dracosaur. It's 3 red for a 5/5 creature dinosaur dragon with flying and first strike. And at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top 2 cards of your library. You may play them this turn. If you exiled a land card this way, create a 3/1 red dinosaur creature token. If you exiled a non-land card this way, create a treasure token. What do you think about Bone Horde Dracosaur?
I always like impulse draws. I've got a Thaldorn deck that I'm probably going to put this in just because it's more ways to exile cards and play them. Plus extra tokens, regardless of what deck you're, or what commander you're playing, extra tokens on hitting a land card is a great or land card or a non-land card for it being creature token or a treasure token. It's a great reward. I really like this card. I'm definitely going to be putting it in probably more than one deck.
It is requiring you to like wait a full turn before you get your value, but I like that it's not really scary enough to make people want to kill it. Like if an opponent played this, you know, in the mid to late game, I would be much more concerned with something that like actively makes me lose than like, okay, you're going to draw some cards, but I get to see what they are. I don't know. If I had like a single spot removal spell in my hand, I don't know if I would burn it on this.
Especially with two other players competing for the biggest stud on the board award. I don't think that this is going to win many of those.
Yeah, it is also nice that it's just a fantastic blocker with, you know, first strike and 5 power. So it will protect you a little bit. So I kind of like this. And of course, like, you know, it has 2 relevant creature types for the many, many decks that reward you for playing dinosaurs or dragons. So I think this has a lot going on for it. Would I play this in like a red good stuff deck? I'm not sure about that, but like any deck that's subsidizing dragons, subsidizing dinosaurs, subsidizing like casting from exile, I think it's a pretty easy inclusion. Next card is Trumpeting Carnosaur. It's 4 red for a 7/6 trampler. It's a dinosaur, of course. When it enters the battlefield, discover 5, and you can pay 2 red and discard Trumpeting Carnosaur to deal 3 damage to target creature or planeswalker. How do you feel about Trumpeting Carnosaur?
It's great for decks that care about casting from exile, whether that's Prosper, Felden. Discarding it to deal damage is pretty nice. It's 3 mana for 3 damage, which isn't the best rate that we have in red, but having a additional optional use for the card is always nice to see. I appreciate having options.
Yeah, I'm excited to put this in my Felden of the Third Path deck. Probably consider it for other reanimator lists with red in it. Yeah, it's not the greatest rate to deal 3 damage for 3 mana, but it also just like gets it into a zone that you can easily get it out of, especially if you're in like a black color identity. You know, discarding this on turn 3 to shoot somebody's commander or utility creature, and then reanimating it on turn 4, and then discovering for 5, like that's a lot of value. That seems really good to me. So I'm excited to make this card work, and I am just always keeping my eyes open for more creatures like this that have useful ETBs and have a means of putting themselves directly into your graveyard.
Yeah, this next one is Zoyoywa's Justice. It is 1 red for an instant that reads, the owner of target artifact or creature with mana value 1 or greater shuffles it into their library. Then that player discovers X, where X is its mana value.
Mm-hmm. So I think of this as a new red staple. It's super cheap. It's instant speed. It gets rid of 2 permanent types. And yeah, they'll get something at random. But I think I like this better than Wild Magic Surge. Wild Magic Surge getting the same card type, seeing it mess people up pretty badly. I remember my opponent like hit my shared animosity with a Wild Magic Surge, and then I flipped into a Rabble Rousing, and then like with the Rabble Rousing, I like hit away a Breath of Fury, and so I just killed him immediately. So like Wild Magic Surge can go poorly very often. I think Zoyoba's Justice, the fact that like it hits any non-land card, makes it less likely that you're going to go like out of the frying pan into the fire. More often, Zoyoba's Justice is just going to like, you know, hit a ponder and basically be a whiff. And it still serves that function of like getting you out of like, I'm going to die immediately to this thing on the board.
I think that Chaos Warp as well, which is a somewhat similar card, it sees enough play. I see it come up at my local Commander Nights enough that I don't think that this is going to be a card that's difficult to fit into a lot of red decks.
Happy to see this card. I hope we get to see like more cards like it, where you're just randomly replacing the thing that's about to kill you with something that probably won't. All right, our only green card today is Glimpse the Core. This is one and a green for a sorcery. Choose one. Search your library for a basic forest card, put that card onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle, or return target cave card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. The cave part is mostly flavor text. The first mode, the like getting a basic forest, certainly seems bad in comparison to, say, Nature's Lore or Three Visits or even Rampant Growth, but I think there might be room for another one of these effects. You'd be surprised how many mono green decks are running Rampant Growth. And in mono green, of course, this is essentially the same card. So if you're looking for more like two mana land ramp options in mono green, I think this is probably worth it. But I definitely like would not want to run this in a multicolor green deck, because you at that point you just have better options. You have Farseek and similar that can actually fix your mana in addition to ramping you. All right, we've only got one multicolor card today, and it's Molten Collapse. Black red for a sorcery. Choose one. If you descended this turn, you may choose both instead. And as a reminder, you descended if a permanent card was put into your graveyard from anywhere. So you can either destroy target creature or planeswalker, or destroy target non-creature, non-land permanent with mana value 1 or less. So the first mode on this card just looks a lot like Dreadbore. Dreadbore actually sees pretty decent amount of play. It's in 21,000 decks on EDH Rec. So getting Dreadbore plus the option to snipe something with mana value 1 or less, or potentially both if you have like a fetch land or a discard outlet or some other way to descend, adds a lot of value to the card. And I would certainly like expect to replace any copies of Dreadbore I had with this. If not, just run both. Let's jump into the artifacts. First up, we've got Shimil, the Inner Sun. It's a 6-mana legendary artifact. Spells you control can't be countered. And at the beginning of your end step, discover 5. And as a reminder, discover 5 is exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card with mana value 5 or less. Cast it without paying its mana cost, or put it in your hand, then put the rest on the bottom in a random order. How do you feel about Shimil?
I feel like there are creatures that have that exact same text on it about spells you control can't be countered. And generally speaking, I prefer to run creatures over artifacts when it comes to specific abilities. Beginning of your end step, discover 5 is fun, but at the same time, if I'm spending 6 mana to cast a random thing that costs 5, as well as protect my things from being countered, I'd rather just spend the 6 mana on a 6 drop that gives my creatures haste and protection from counter spells. I don't see any reason to run this effect on an artifact, especially one that's this expensive.
This is, I think, a card that suffers from like trying to do multiple things. I think it's less than the sum of its parts, basically.
Yes.
If I want to stop my spells from being countered, I want to do like get that going cheaply. Like, you know, it feels really good when you play like Allosaurus Rider and then immediately spend the rest of your mana on like Crater Hoof or something. Or even like you know, I see my opponent has blue open. Okay, I'll spend 2 mana on defense grid. Now I know they're probably not going to be able to interact with me, and then I can do something else. Like, I want the anti-counter spell tech to be super cheap. Thing is, like, I know my opponent's playing tons of counters, and so, like, I'm gonna tap out for a 6-drop. It's like, okay, they're gonna spend 2 mana and counter it, and they just time walked you. It's like, if it resolves, sure, it's great, but this is exactly the kind of spell that, like, will draw a counter spell out of your opponents and not at an efficient rate either. You know, I can play my defense grid and they can spend their 2 mana and counter it, but in that situation, I only spent 2 mana to draw out the counter spell. Where, and then I can still, like, do something with the rest of my turn. I don't want to spend 6 mana to draw out the counter spell. And then, of course, like, the random value on this, I don't really want it here. Like, I would rather play a 3-drop that discovered 2 every turn, because, like, the variance is just going to be less swingy. If I hit a Ponder off of my Chimille Discover 5 trigger, I feel like I just got absolutely fleeced. Whereas, you know, if I hit it off my Discover 2, I would feel, okay, well, I lost out on a little bit of value, but I don't feel like an idiot.
Right. The card that I was trying to remember was Surok Dragonclaw, and the thing I'd forgotten about it was it also reads this spell cannot be countered, mm-hmm. which, if I'm going to spend that much mana to protect myself from counterspells, I'd like to not run the risk of the thing I'm casting being countered before it hits the field.
Yeah, that is a huge advantage of, like, Allosaurus Shepherd. You know, you just don't have to worry about it being countered. Like, that, if your anti-counterspell tech is vulnerable to counterspells, maybe it's not very good. I think we can move on to the next card. Do you want to read this off?
This is Mutzalanthe, the Great Door. It is 3 generic for a legendary artifact that has tap, draw a card, then discard a card. It also has 4 tap, transform Mutzalanthe, the Great Door, activate only if there are 4 more permanent types among cards in your graveyard. On the backside is The Core, a legendary land that has tap, add X mana of any one color, where X is the number of permanent cards in your graveyard.
I'm pretty into this card. I'm not going to run it in every color identity. Like, I can probably do better in, like, blue, probably in black, but there are some decks where it just doesn't hurt me too much to run, like, a looter. So it seems like it's low opportunity cost to run. It triggers descent if that's irrelevant. It also can help you, like, sculpt your graveyard. I could be convinced to run this in a number of decks. And then it just has the benefit of, if I ever have 4 mana untapped at the end of my opponent's turn and I have nothing better to do, well, okay, I'll just turn this into a really powerful land. The Core is going to tap for a huge amount of mana. It's, like, so not difficult to get that producing, like, you know, 3 or 4 or more mana. It's just like, are you running fetch lands? Okay. Seems quite easy to make the Core good, especially if you're doing the looting off of Mutzalanthe.
I really like this card. It's always nice seeing good colorless card draw, especially as someone who has an Eldrazi deck. Like you were saying, the Core easily taps for just a tremendous amount of mana, especially if you've been using the Great Door up until now. I think this is a very good addition to the card pool.
Next up, we've got Roaming Throne. 4 mana for a 4/4 artifact creature golem with ward 2. As it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. Roaming Throne is the chosen type in addition to its other types. And if a triggered ability of another creature you control of the chosen type triggers, it triggers an additional time.
My immediate thought is Jota the Unifier, partly because that's one of my favorite decks to play, but there are a tremendous number of commanders that have a fantastic triggered ability where that is the main goal of the deck, whether that be more card draw with a 0/2.0, getting extra proliferates with attracts or super friends. There are just so many decks that as soon as this hits the field, it's just extra value, forgetting completely about the extra creature type in typal decks.
Yeah, no, it is funny that they made this reward for typal decks and it's just like, oh, well, I'll throw it in my, like, Kadena deck as just a way to get more morph triggers or something. Like, no, it seems like a very broadly useful card. There's just so many commanders with triggered abilities. And Yeah, I think it's a great addition to the format.
This next one is Tarion Soulcleaver. It is one colorless for a legendary artifact equipment that reads, equipped creature has vigilance, and when another artifact or creature is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on the equipped creature, and it has an equip cost of 2.
This clearly looks a lot like a Blade of the Blood Chief. It's really doing something similar. It's a cheap equipment, cheap equip cost, and then cares about things hitting the graveyard. Notably, because this also triggers off of artifacts, it's potentially a win con for treasure decks. You can just throw this on your Prosper, your Jolene, the Plunder Queen, and you'll be able to pump them up to pretty significant levels as you're cracking your treasures. What do you think about Tarion Soulcleaver?
I think that this is just a good value card. It's a cheap cost. It's a fun equipment. Vigilance is a nice ability to see. I wouldn't pay 3 mana just for Vigilance alone, but I think that especially in Commander where you've got 3 other players as well, a good chunk of artifacts and creatures are going to be cycling in and out of the battlefield over just the course of the game. And this probably won't stay attached to the same creature, but I think that it'll just have good value almost regardless of what deck you're playing.
Yeah, if you've got a lot of treasure in your meta, if your opponents are doing that, if your opponents are doing like aristocrats things, then it seems like this could allow your equipped creature to grow pretty quickly with very low initial investment. Okay, I think we can move on to the next card, which is Threefold Thunder Hulk. 7 mana for a 0/0 artifact creature gnome. It enters the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters on it. And whenever Threefold Thunder Hulk enters the battlefield or attacks, create a number of 1/1 colorless gnome artifact creature tokens equal to its power. It also has 2, sacrifice another artifact, put a +1/+1 counter on Threefold Thunder Hulk. So what do you think about this guy?
I think that this card sounds a little familiar. That being, of course, Grave Titan.
Definitely, yeah. It is more expensive, but it does produce more bodies. I mean, there's some fun things you can do with this. If you have a Nim Death Mantle and like Ashnod's Altar or a Quark Clan Ironworks, you could just get infinite mana, infinite tokens, infinite dies triggers. I mean, I guess that's also true of pretty much any creature that makes a lot of tokens when it enters. It could potentially do something for like a Graz deck, maybe. It's just like there's not that many significant token producers in a colorless color identity. Where else do you think this might fit into the format?
I'm not sure. Obviously, it's a expensive but good token generator, especially if you have, for instance, in a mono-white token deck, you've got some Anthems on the field already. Its power could easily enter as 5 or higher. And so I think it fits well in some token generation decks, obviously some artifact decks as well. I can't think of anything else immediately off the top of my head, however.
I mean, it is just another creature for the Hamza BattleBots deck. It's expensive colorless creature, enters the battlefield with +1/+1 counters. It just fits that niche, and it's better than a lot of the ones you're running. Like, there's just so many crappy modular guys from Darksteel that find their place in that deck. This card actually does something. I don't know. I think it's got some legs in the format. We just got to figure out the right place for it. Do you want to read off the last card we're going to cover today?
Yeah, this one is Pit of Offerings. It is a land cave that enters the battlefield tapped, and when it enters the battlefield, exile up to 3 target cards from graveyards. And then it has tap, add 1 colorless, or tap, add 1 mana of any of the exiled cards' colors.
I love this card. I absolutely love this card. I mean, it's kind of a colorless Bajuka Bog. It doesn't get everything out of that graveyard, but unlike a Bajuka Bog, it can spread the exile out. Like if one opponent has like a From the Catacombs in their graveyard and another opponent has like a scary thing that they're going to try to reanimate, and if another person has like a flashback card, you're able to hit like the 3 scariest things regardless of where they are. And because it's colorless, it just fits in any deck. I'm much more likely to run Graveyard Hate if it doesn't take up a slot in my deck. And I'm happy to cut like a random land for a Pit of Offerings if there's just a lot of graveyard stuff going on in my metagame.
I really like this card as well. I do wish it didn't enter tapped. I don't love tap lands as a general rule. However, like you're saying, it's free Graveyard Hate. depending on what you're exiling, you can target specific cards for specific mana colors or just the biggest threats. I do wish you could get more value out of it if it was in your opening hand, because if it's in your first three lands, it's just going to tap for colorless, realistically. But nonetheless, I do still really like the card.
It's getting easier and easier to get a critical mass of graveyard hate effects without really feeling like you're paying much for it. If your graveyard hate is in your mana base or cantrips, it's just not very painful to fit that into your deck. That brings us to the end of this set review. Overall, how are you feeling about this set? I know we didn't cover everything. There's certainly a lot of tribal stuff that we left on the table. But after going through all these cards and seeing the full set, how are you feeling about Lost Caverns of Ixalan?
I really like the set. There are a lot of cards that I'm very excited for. I can think of at least 7 or 8 cards just from memory alone that I have plans for some of my decks. And also there are a few of the legendary cards from last episode. As I was listening, I was sitting there thinking that I might have to go and buy some more card sleeves because there might be another deck on the way. I'm very excited for sure.
Yeah, I'm very happy with this set. It just happens that a lot of what is going on aligns with what I enjoy doing in Commander anyway. I mean, it's very clearly a graveyard set. So there's all this infrastructure in the set to help me do the things I already enjoy doing. Like there's some really good discard outlets. There's some great reanimation engines. So I really enjoy that part of it. And then there's also this like crafting theme. Like they need to have a high density of artifacts. So you just get like useful abilities as ETB triggers on artifacts, which makes it really easy to reuse them, easy to cycle them into engines. I'm enjoying a lot of what's going on here. I'm having a lot of fun with this set. After skipping a couple pre-releases, I'm probably going to find my way to the local game store this weekend. And I can't wait to brew with all these cards and expect I'm going to be picking up a lot of stuff on TCG Player. Of course, using the Commander Theory affiliate link. So check the episode description if you want to help out the show. But yeah, I think it's a fantastic set. And the mechanics are just amazing.
No, I'm excited for the limited environment for this set as well. Like you mentioned, pre-release, I am heading to the pre-release in my town tonight. I'm excited to see what limited environment looks like. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's just a set that I've been excited for since they started showing the cards from it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that basically wraps things up. Thank you again for coming on the show, Brian. It's been great to discuss all these cards with you. Really appreciate your insight and your input. Is there anywhere, any social media you want to plug? If people want to talk about Commander with you, where is the best place to find you?
Best place to find me is going to be the Commander Theory Discord. Tragically, I am pretty much not on social media at all. So Discord is going to be the best place to find me.
All right, perfect. Well, if you are interested in joining the Commander Theory Discord, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/commandertheory. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Commander Theory.
And on Twitter, I am at Fat Bartleby.
You can also email us at commandertheory@gmail.com. Our theme song is Lincoln Continental by Nick Cage. You can check him out on SoundCloud.
And if you're interested in some other creative projects I'm working on, I have a band you can check out. We are a pink punk, pop punk band called The Have-Nots, all one word like cosmonauts. You can listen to all of our music for free right now. You can just head over to thehavenots.bandcamp.com. That is thehavenauts.bandcamp.com. And check us out. Let me know what you think.